Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All right, let me go ahead and take partial responsibility for the stupid Super Bowl narrative that Jimmy Garoppolo has had a subpar playoff performance. Ever since Jimmy G walked the streets of Beverly Hills with a porn star, I tagged him with the nickname Jimmy G-String and complained that he's loose with his decision-making. Jimmy G, thou art loose, has been my T.D. Jakes-inspired catchphrase on this show and on social media. I regret it. Do I regret being a Jimmy G-String skeptic? No. Do I regret contributing to an atmosphere that has Jimmy G in the media crosshairs Super Bowl week? After his team won playoff games in dominant fashion, 37-20 and 27-10? Yes, I do. The 49ers are rallying around their embattled quarterback who should not be in battle. There's nothing wrong with throwing the ball 8 times in the NFC Championship when your team wins by 17 points. I hope the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl by 17 points and Patrick Mahomes only throws the ball 8 times. That is my absolute dream scenario. San Francisco coach Kyle Shanahan is tired of answering questions about Jimmy G's playoff performance. Take a listen to Shanahan's testy response yesterday.
I think it's really funny that people say that. Does anyone notice how good we were running the ball? And we weren't just running it to punt and try to win 3-0. There was times, especially in that Green Bay game, we had a better chance of getting a 30-yard gain running it, just from some of the looks we were getting and things like that. There's nothing against Jimmy. Should never apologize for us running the ball too well.
Richard Sherman has been defending Jimmy G all season. Look, I was a Jimmy G skeptic, but at this point, I really can't find anything negative to say about Jimmy G's strength. He's thrown for 208 passing yards, 1 TD, and 1 interception in 2 postseason games. He appears to be taking the exact same route Tom Brady traveled to his first Super Bowl. Brady did what he was asked to do and nothing more. He rode a great New England defense to a title. Brady tossed 1 TD and 1 interception in his first postseason run. I'm worried I've contributed to giving Jimmy G and the 49ers a rallying point. Marcellus, I know you're not big on bulletin board material and extra motivation, but I genuinely believe in what is called the placebo effect, an inert substance or treatment that has no therapeutic value but tricks the mind. In his mind, Jimmy G is backed into a corner where he must play at an exceptional level in order for the 49ers to win. If Jimmy G has a monster performance Sunday, I'm going to blame myself. All right, guys. All right, Marcellus, get us rolling. Has Jimmy G underachieved in the postseason?
I'm glad you had that reaction because you know how absurd that sounds. Hell no, he hasn't underachieved. Look, everyone wants to be the reason why you win. Winning is the ultimate goal, but you get to the after party a little sooner when you know you're the reason. So Jimmy's not going to be first to the party, but damn it, there's a party for him. This is a guy who goes out there and does exactly what is asked of him. So what is that? Sometimes it's your call, only 8 times to throw the football. But guess why? We are dominating in the run game. So like a young Tom Brady, as you mentioned, Jimmy G's in a situation where being a game manager is actually a positive thing. Whatever is asked of him, he is doing, and he's doing it at an exceptional level, to the point of all the quarterbacks since 1960. I'm talking about single bar leather helmets, your kind of style, your guys back in those days. Jimmy G is number 2 all time in points per game scored. Think about that. Number 1 is Patrick Mahomes, who gets all the credit. Number 3 is Tom Brady. And 4th is Drew Brees. Yes, I just said Jimmy G allows his team, whether it's with his arm or handing the ball off and protecting the football, to the tune that they have the 2nd most points scored in the modern era. So you got to respect what this guy is doing. He's making sure the train keeps rolling down the tracks.
No, he hasn't underachieved, but it's telling that Kyle Shanahan is running the ball so much. Where did Kyle Shanahan come before he went to San Francisco? He was in Atlanta. He didn't do this to Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan was slinging the thing all over the field. Now, they're running the ball very well, but he comes out. We gotta start the game off with the run. When he was in Atlanta, when he should have run the ball, he was still throwing the ball. So for me, that says, I don't think Kyle Shanahan really trusts and believes that if need be, Jimmy G can get it done. Mm. If I can limit his attempts throwing the ball, now the turnovers, that wouldn't come into play. That's what concerns me is I don't believe Kyle Shanahan believes if I need Jimmy G to win the game, and he did do it against New Orleans, but I just go back to Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan was throwing the ball all over the field, and he doesn't throw it at all with Jimmy G.
I'm going to say no, he's not underachieving, but I will say Jason Whitlock trying to paint the Kansas City Chiefs as underdogs now.
Oh, yeah, he's flipping midweek. Midweek.
That ship has sailed. You are underachieving on your attempt to try to change that narrative.
Say it.
Patrick Mahomes is coming into the game as such a big, big name and what this represents for the future of football. And then there's Garoppolo. And I think, again, when you look at the body of work, he has done everything he's been asked to do. Whether they trust him, whether they believe he's the biggest winner of all time, whatever it is that the game plan is called for this 49ers team with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback, he has delivered. You can't say that's underachieving, even if the stats don't sit there and scream at you, this guy is a megastar for your team. So, again, when you're looking at what this team is endeavoring to do going into this Super Bowl game, it is to play business as usual.
Right.
Control the ball, tempo the game, run the ball. If we're having success running the ball, we don't have to throw it. I don't care if it's Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Mahomes.
So
I don't care.
So you can play quarterback then for the 49ers?
Correct.
No, he can't.
Correct.
No, he can't. And
this
whole,
it off.
The whole, the whole notion that anybody could quarterback this 49ers team to this point because their running game is so good, I reject that totally.
If we had to throw it.
Look, listen, TJ, you made a very interesting point about Matt Ryan and how Kyle Shanahan handled Matt Ryan and that Atlanta. You can learn from your mistakes.
Say it.
You can learn from your mistakes. And then the other thing I would say to the two defensive guys that I know y'all understand, you can't run the ball, or the best way to run the ball is when the safeties fear your quarterback. You can't just walk up there in the box. So to me, for them to have been this dominant running the ball, that to me says whatever's on that San Francisco tape tells the defensive coordinator and the safeties, you better be careful.
Yeah, if you don't respect his arm, then you're just going to shorten the acreage and you're just going to load up the box and do what the Kansas City Chiefs were able to do to the Tennessee Titans and shut down Derrick Henry because of the lack of respect for Ryan Tannehill's arm and the daring of you beating us with that same arm. So you look at this team, and this entire year, Jimmy G has had moments where he looked like the electrifying Matt Ryan of yesterday. You see 10 games of tape of Jimmy G with a passer rating over 100. You don't get that just by being TJ rolling out of bed and LeVar trying to play quarterback. You actually have to be a real quarterback.
Yeah,
so as
TJ,
a defender, I respect an offense that has learned from his own mistakes. I know who my coach's daddy is. Mike Shanahan is going to run that football. And that's what they're doing to the success of maybe winning the championship.
All right, let's ask this question, though. This is where I kind of think I'm on the other side.
Uh-oh.
Does Jimmy G need to throw for more than 200 yards, have a relatively big game in order for them to win on Sunday?
I say no. I remember the most prolific passing game in Super Bowl history was in a loss, Tom Brady. Four of the top eight passing games in the Super Bowl are losses by those quarterbacks. So for us to go out there with some arithmetic and say, basically, you have to do this and you'll win, the numbers don't suggest that that's going to actually measure up. So I look at this game basically as shortening the game by using your running game and your defense. This team is constructed differently than the Atlanta Falcons team with Kyle Shanahan at offensive coordinator. Use your running game. We were just talking about this last night. Off leverage, the motions, everything that they use is deception. And then they hit you in the mouth or they angle you. Please use all your attributes and don't get locked into just passing numbers.
It really will depend on how the game is played. If Kansas City is able to stop the ball and or they're able to put up points on that defense, he's going to have to throw for yards. They're not just going to be able to. If Kansas City is Kansas City and they're throwing a ball like they normally do, he's going to have, you're not going to be able to just hand the ball off, because why did Derrick Henry only have 69 yards? Tennessee got in the hole. They really couldn't run the ball as much as they wanted to. So if they can just make San Francisco punt the ball 3-4 times and Kansas City plays Kansas City football, he's going to have to throw for 20 yards.
But they weren't in the hole. I mean, they were up 10 on them. Like, and Tennessee had the lead, and then Kansas City did what Kansas City
and then
does.
It was like a boxer. He lost the first three rounds, Tennessee, and then he swept the next seven.
Yeah.
They had so much success quickly that their ability to adjust when Kansas City came storming back led to them panicking and not sticking to the game plan that got them that lead in the first place. I'm with TJ on this. I think that the way the tempo of the game, the scoring will dictate if Jimmy Garoppolo has to be a 200-yard passer during the course of the game. You look at what he brings to the table and what this 49ers team brings to the table, they are going to try to run the ball, and they're going to try to run the ball efficiently. Their misdirection, their zone read running plays, they're all going to be plays that create problems for this defensive front for Kansas City, which should in turn open up the back end of that defense for Kansas City. One good point to think about here is these teams met in the most important preseason game of the year. Now, some people say preseason doesn't matter, but we all know which one matters. Third game matters. These guys met in the third game of the preseason. Jimmy threw for 188 yards. He outperformed Mahomes in that game. These guys are familiar with each other. Even though it's preseason, they're familiar. I don't think he has to unless he needs to.
I think you and TJ are biting your tongue, and you know, I hope I don't regret this statement. Kansas City's going to score points. That's right. Why this man's going to have to score, throw for more than 200 yards. Because Andy Reid off a bye in a Super Bowl moment is going to have something special laid out. Kansas City is not going to – I don't believe Kansas City is going to fall down 17 points or anything crazy like they had the previous two games. Let's remember in Andy Reid's other Super Bowl appearance, he had, in my opinion, the Patriots where he wanted them. Donovan McNabb threw up and jacked the game up.
T.O. got hurt.
But T.O. played in that game and balled. Donovan, but I'm talking about they had a chance to finish New England.
But he didn't.
And didn't. The quarterback choked. This quarterback's not going to choke. Andy Reid, coming off a bye, is going to have a game plan that will put points on the board. Andy and Kyle Shanahan's great, and he has his dad backing him up. This is Andy Reid's moment, man. This is the chance for him to really cement himself as a legendary coach. I don't think he's going to blow it. Jimmy G's going to – he ain't going to get away with 130 yards. He ain't going to get away with 90, 80 yards. He's going to have to throw for more than 200 to win this game.
They've had blowouts by him having lesser performances by the numbers because of the tempo, because of how it dictates it. It's a death by 1,000 paper cuts when a team is able to run 5 yards, 7 yards, 12 yards, 9 yards. You're like, hell, it's so defeating, more than physically. It's like mentally destroying you in the moment because you can't stop it. I had an Intel dinner last night. Now, I'm not going to snitch anybody out. But the Kansas City Chiefs, and I know this for fact, are concerned that they're not going to be able to slow down this running game to the tune of it's going to be 30-plus points necessary to win this game.
They can do that.
They could do that in a quarter, let alone in the four quarters. But that running game, I'm trying to tell you, as a defensive player, I played against Shanahan's offenses with lesser offensive linemen, with lesser running backs. And let me tell you one thing. When you sit there, you got your hand in the dirt, and you don't know which angle he's going to use, and more importantly, shield you from the linebacker overflowing, it's just beautiful calculus to watch. And that's what this running game is right now doing. It's going to pose a threat.
Yeah, I'm afraid for Anthony Hitchens, number 53 for the Chiefs.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, "Getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind." And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
Joining us now, a couple of Steelers legends. One's already in the Hall of Fame, one of the greatest defensive players of all time, Rod Woodson, and a future Hall of Famer, in my opinion, James Harrison. All right, let's talk about the most exclusive club in sports. The Hall of Fame selected 15 new members this year as part of a special centennial class in honor of the NFL's 100-year anniversary, but not everyone is thrilled about it, with Hall of Famer Deion Sanders going off yesterday about the crowd of people about to join him in Canton.
What is the Hall of Famer now? Is it a guy who played a long time? It's so skewed now, I don't know what's what. Once upon a time, a Hall of Famer was somebody who changed the darn game, who made you want to provoke you to reach in your pocket and pay for admission to go see that guy play. Forget the rest of the team. You wanted to see that guy. That's not a Hall of Fame anymore. Everybody, Tom, Dick, and Harry, you're a Hall of Famer. You're a Hall of Famer. You're a Hall of Famer. And they let everybody in this thing now. It's not exclusive anymore, and I don't like it.
I'm telling you, I'm so glad Deion said this. And Deion's willing to be the bad guy. Don't want to put you in a tough spot, Rod, but I got to ask.
Yeah.
You're a Hall of Famer, and you certainly deserve to be there. You agree with Deion?
I'm in agreement with the centennial class. I mean, every year we do have that. We have to have a mandate where we have so many guys go in. I'm not a fan of that. I'm more like a baseball. It's baseball. Sometimes they have one guy. So if you belong, you belong. It's supposed to be the best of the best. So centennial class, you know, I'm just not a fan. What's going to happen in 125 years? Are we putting another 15 guys in? Then in 150 years, are we putting another 20 guys in? I mean, so what's the criteria? And then what's going to be the criteria for those guys who go in? So I'm just like, I understand what he's saying. I agree with it. I'm not a fan of it. But that's the Hall of Fame. They made that decision to do it. I know all the guys who are going in are going to be thrilled. Even when they get there, I'm going to embrace them because they're going to be wearing the gold jackets. They'll be my brothers. But I do question, like, why they did it and what's the criteria for those guys to get in on a daily basis.
Let me defer to the future Hall of Famer.
Well, that's what you say. You say future Hall of Famer. I don't know if that's necessarily true, to be honest with you. I'm a little in agreeance with Deion. I think to be in that elite class, you have to have affected the game. You have to have been, you know, a superior player in, you know, a number of years and been at the top of your game. You had to be a guy that once you were done, everyone else used you as the measuring stick for the next person. So, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm in agreement with it, you know?
I'm glad he is campaigning this message. And this is a message that we have to fully respect. For me, the top of the mountain is not being a champion. It's being a Hall of Famer. I'll tell you why. The exclusivity. I know champions that didn't even play in the damn game. I know champions that didn't even help the team get there. But I don't know any Hall of Famers that didn't put in work and do it the right way and do it consistently. So I always look up at the top of the mountain and say, that gold jacket represents the greatest things in our sport. And it's being lost. There should be an uncomfortable distance between a guy like me who had moments in a good career and guys like y'all who had a great career. And trust me, the man in the mirror is having that conversation every single day. So why lie to the world? But now we're starting to go from the nouns, which are the numbers and the men, to the adjectives of likability and, oh, he's cool. And, wow, he really had a couple of good days, games, weeks. And it's sad because now you look at the situation, the Hall of Fame, there are guys who just don't belong. Just don't belong on the same level as guys as you. So if this continues, they're going to take away the most exclusive club that we have, which is the Hall of Fame.
One of the things I believe, Rod, and I've said this, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. I think there should be a 10-year cap on eligibility. If you can't make it into the Hall of Fame after 10 attempts, that to me says you're not a Hall of Famer. Because to me, I just don't think when a guy's a true Hall of Famer, it doesn't take 9, 10, 11 ballots to get you on. And then for Drew Pearson, they've extended the pain of not being in the Hall of Fame for this guy for 30 years.
Yeah, and, you know, Deion's right in a sense. When he kept speaking in this conversation he had yesterday is that when you say the name, it shouldn't be a pause.
Yeah.
Like, is he a Hall of Famer? You go, You know, if you have to have that, he's not a Hall of Famer. He's not in that class. It's supposed to be the elite of the elite. And I try to be very unbiased with this because when they do get in, they're going to be my brothers. But with that being said, you want to see the right guys get in.
Right.
You really want to see the right guys get in. And I'm not saying that the new class is coming up with the guys who are going to be voted for Saturday. Some of those guys are legit guys. It's the centennial class that they're starting to, they did this year that has me more paused. Like, some of these guys just, I don't know if they belong. But then, again, I'm not voting. We don't have a vote. There's only two current Hall of Famers that vote. That's James Lofton and Dan Fouts. Nobody else get a say-so. We get a text every now and then for some of the AP writers, and they tell me to give me their top five. I'm like, why? It doesn't matter. Because you're not going to vote them anyway.
Changes, though, that they've had over the past, you know, number of years, especially with quarterbacks and receivers and the inflation and the numbers of what you're seeing now compared
that's
to what
future.
Those guys had to go through, you know, in the past, like, it's not even comparable. Like,
that's what we say. What is the standard bearer? Like, you know, if you're 17 years and you rush for 60 yards a game, are you a Hall of Famer? It used to be all pros. If you can't be the best at what you do in a given year or a given time span, and they can't talk about you after the game is over, and they said, hey, they always ask the question, who's the best quarterbacks? And your name never pops up? How can you be in the Hall of Fame? Or if you're the same offensive tackle, defensive back, receiver, your name should pop up somewhere along the line, and it should pop in your air. And if it doesn't pop up in that air, you shouldn't be in Canton.
I think James makes a great point about how the game has changed in subtle ways, because I get tired of hearing people say, well, so-and-so's got better numbers than John Elway. And I go, hey, man, there's about 20% of these passes that are completions now that Ronnie Lott would have taken the receiver apart, and it would have been an incompletion.
Right. So don't. He would have taken
Robert,
apart.
No question.
Right.
And again, there was a fear of going over the middle. Now everybody signs up for it. I'll go over the middle.
But that's future. So, okay, the centennial class, these guys are done. Their competition is over. We're talking about the guys who are currently playing. So, you know, those guys who are getting big numbers passing the ball, when they're overly protected in the pocket, the receivers are protected outside, being a defenseless receiver, you can't make those big hits anymore. Those guys are going to have numbers who are going to outweigh other probably guys in the Hall of Fame. Are they Hall of Famers? No, they're not Hall of Famers. So I think that this, what's the measuring stick to what is included to be a Hall of Famer? And I think that's the question for the writers and the voters, because I don't know it. Well, I have no idea what it is.
You know, the numbers are always going to change over the eras from the 60s to today. You see the numbers increase, obviously, but that's the numerator. The denominator and the common denominator has to be dominance. I don't give a damn if you win against 180-pound linemen. Did you dominate them? Now they're 300-pound, did you dominate them? I don't want to get caught up in anything else because I think that's what's disturbing. What's disturbing is they don't know what to look for, therefore they're allowing anybody in. You can't have this Hall of Fame of greatness turn into the Hall of Fame of goodness.
And it seems
it's not
like,
about that.
But it seems like the more your name is out there, if you're in a bigger city, you're in a bigger market,
yeah,
you might get in.
Bruh, my career gets better every time I do this show. Because, you know, every day, somebody walks up to me, you are amazing.
You are strong.
Boy, stop lying, boy. I'm feeling good, but not great.
Let me tell you how bad it is about being on TV.
Man.
I was a mediocre mid-major college football player.
Yeah.
But if you search me on Google because I do this show, people, did Jason Whitlock play in the NFL?
What? No, where'd that come from?
Right? So, I get elevated. All right, we're coming to you live from Miami. Fox Sports is taking over South Beach as we look ahead to Super Bowl 54. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Husmanzadeh is back. Join us now, former Rams star Torrey Holt. All right, let's talk about his former team, the 1999 St. Louis Rams, and the greatest show on turf. Some people think Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' weapons look a lot like those old Rams teams, with 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh saying Kansas City's roster looks like an Olympic relay team. When you look at the numbers, he's got a point. There are some definite similarities. The Rams scored more points and put up more total yards, but Kansas City is averaging more passing yards, better third down percentage, and it's pretty close in terms of passer rating as well. All right, we got an expert in the house.
Yes, we do.
Respect the wig, respect the KC brand when I ask this question. Mahomes, Chiefs, or greatest show on turf, better offense?
Greatest show on turf, all day. Ain't even no question.
I believe there's a question to it. I just asked you a question.
It is a question, but it's the greatest show on turf for sure.
If you look at
our offense and who we had on the perimeter, I heard Tyreek Hill mention that they had five guys on the perimeter. We had five guys on the perimeter.
Yes.
So it was myself, it was Isaac, it was Azakim, it was Ricky Pearl. You put Marshall Faulk out there on the perimeter as well. We could go empty. We could throw the ball with the best of it. And
Torrey,
three consecutive years, over 500 yards.
Torrey,
three consecutive years.
Torrey, have you heard of Travis Kelce?
Yeah, Travis Kelce's a good player.
I think it says Travis here you really guys had. You had Roy Williams in North Carolina.
A little more than Roy Williams. Roland Williams and Travis. Obviously, Travis Kelce, you got to go with
Roland. Oh, I thought that was Roy Williams, the North Carolina coach I saw.
Roll was a good player, good blocking tight end. But I would say greatest show on turf for sure. The way we played the game, how we pushed the ball down the field, the amount of points that we put up, and we changed the way teams were drafting. To try to match up with us out on the perimeter and just to match up with us, period, offensively. So I go greatest show on turf.
I mean, look, you're a great ambassador of the game, and you're being really politically correct up here. Let me tell the truth. Let me keep it 1,000 up here. It's the greatest show on turf. It's not even close. Doing this. First of all, y'all won.
Exactly.
It all.
Exactly.
A little premature with this question so far. And we're talking about a team that actually was better offensively last year than this year. If anything, there's some regression. They were down in points, down in passing yards, down in passer rating. But let me start taking some shots, and I'm doing this professionally. Y'all trying to tell me that Sammy Watkins, who scored 3 touchdowns in the first game and didn't score another touchdown the entire damn year to the postseason, is going to measure up to the greatest show on turf when they have production every single week? Mecole Hardman is now Torrey Holt? What? Where's Marshall Faulk on the Kansas City Chiefs? I would drop this pen like it's a mic on your head, man. Are you kidding me? It's not even close.
Right.
They are accomplished, and they always showed up. We're not seeing that same level with the Chiefs.
I'm going to respond, but TJ, go ahead.
So right now, it's the Rams. Things could change, one, if the Chiefs win, and they keep going on the trajectory that they're on.
What, downward?
No.
They were better last year.
They weren't in the Super Bowl last year, so that means they're better this year.
That means the defense is better this year.
No. They're better this year.
I digress.
Where the Rams were special, and he didn't get a lot of you couldn't double anybody. Yep. You put Azakim in that slot.
Mm.
And that's the role that Travis Kelce is playing, but he didn't have the speed that Oz had. Like, Oz was quick. He could run routes, but he was quick and fast. And people that play receiver, he had... Nobody on that Rams team had the speed that Tyreek Hill has. Nobody had the speed that Mecole Hardman has. So that's what separates them. And Kurt Warner was an animal. But Patrick Mahomes, if he stays on his trajectory with his athleticism, the way he moves out the pocket, they can pass him. But right now, it's for sure the Rams.
Look, I'm going to be objective here and say I got to give it up to the 99 Rams for a couple of reasons. Marshall Faulk. We have no answer for that.
Right.
We haven't even talked about Orlando Pace.
Correct.
We have no answer for that. And Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, nice.
But why do we always do that and leave the big guys out?
Why would we do that? Orlando Pace was the
Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame Orlando Pace.
And then when you put in total, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce,
Hall of Fame finalist, Torrey Holt, and Isaac Bruce.
But I want to give two things on the Chiefs side. Yesterday, Eric Mangini was on this show, and he talked about force multipliers. And that Patrick Mahomes is a force multiplier, makes everybody so much. Patrick Mahomes is better than Kurt Warner. I know Kurt Warner's in the Hall of Fame. I know he was the MVP. I get it. Patrick Mahomes is better than him. Then the other advantage y'all have, I would love to move the greatest show on turf to Arrowhead Stadium and make y'all play in the elements and see if that doesn't change some of the stats.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would. The way we play, our mentality, I don't think it would. We were just that good, regardless of the elements. The offense that we had, the way Coach Mark orchestrated things, how he put us in position to really succeed, I don't think the elements would have had that much of a problem. We played in cold elements and got off.
So I don't really think that would have had too much of an issue.
Not against the Patriots.
Oh, don't do that.
We went to Foxborough and beat the Patriots, yo.
You know what you're telling, T.O.?
We went to Foxborough and beat the Patriots.
They got a study guide before the test, and y'all didn't get that study guide.
Right.
So we
played in Green Bay when it was cold. Yeah. We played in Philly when it was cold.
Oh,
we
don't
played
dodge in, these New England
in Boston
shots.
When it, we played,
don't
it, we played,
these
we played in New England when it was cold, and we went and handled our business.
Ty Law put you in
handcuffs. Ty Law arrested you.
Nah.
You got arrested by the law.
Miranda right.
I don't agree with that. He had an interception in the Super Bowl, but he didn't put lock nobody down. No.
I'm just saying.
It ain't
finished or y'all done?
It ain't too many guys that locked us down.
Oh.
At all.
Oh.
Didn't Tampa Bay and Tony, what did y'all score?
It ain't too 11 many, points it ain't too many guys Tampa Bay that locked us like that. Down is what I'm telling you. Double teams, zone, man, it didn't matter. We beat it all. We see every coverage that you can possibly imagine. Right. Every coverage you can possibly, and still got off.
Let's pivot a little bit.
Yeah,
Tory.
Let's get off let's this.
Give me.
Out of here.
Well, he said lockdown. You know, ain't nobody locked off.
We can go get the tape.
Ain't nobody locking me.
Damn. What it do, homie?
We can go get the tape. But listen, I want to move to this Super Bowl.
Rant,
49ers defense versus this Kansas City's offense. Who has the advantage?
Wow, that's a good one. I like what Kansas City, we just talked about Kansas City, what they bring. That front four of the 49ers is something to deal with, allows those other seven guys to play coverage. Be interesting to see when they decide to blitz, now you leave Richard Sherman and some of those in those corners on the edges one-on-one against this track team that we're talking about. I don't think they hold up. If it gets in a shootout, 49ers don't have a chance. I give that edge to the Kansas City Chiefs
because of
Patrick Mahomes.
You picking the Chiefs?
No doubt. I take the Chiefs.
Okay, you mentioned Richard Sherman, so I want to go with my smoke detector. And look, there was a storyline, Darrell Revis poking at Richard Sherman, talking about, hey, man, you don't travel, you're nothing but a zone three corner, you're not of the same level as I. Mm. You played receiver.
Yeah.
Amazingly. Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman, who's better?
Wow. I'll go with Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis, he played press, and Richard has played press. Later in his career, he's played a lot more zone. But Darrell Revis traveled with everybody, and Darrell Revis had return ability, too. You can put him back there to punt, or you can put him back there as a kickoff returner, and he'll take it to the house. Richard Sherman, a former wide receiver, good instincts, good with the football, plays, keeps things out in front of him, very, very smart. Me and Tito talked about how smart he is as a player. That's why he's able to have the type of success. But just overall athletic ability, just a skill and will for the game, and physically manly, I get that to Darrell Revis. Hmm.
So let's go to the offensive side of the ball. Offenses are open up. You can't touch a guy. Who, in your estimation, is the best receiver in the league? Not based off stats, but that can really play and get open. Because we know there's a difference between being really good and just having great stats.
It is. It's a number of guys.
Give me number one.
Number one, route-wise, getting open. I like Amari Cooper. Kid from Dallas.
What'd you just say?
Because Miami
got to you.
And the reason why is his ability to get open, his ability to run routes. Is why I like Amari.
They benched this man, Tory.
It's why I like
Cooper.
In an
important game.
I like.
They
true.
Just benched Tory.
You asked me a question. I'm just answering your question. I like
you
him
just
before
defeated
the fact
your whole
that he
argument.
Likes to get
now everything's
he
in question. Anything you just said. You just said Amari. Julio Jones is in this league. DeAndre Hopkins is in this league.
You let me get there. I like Julio Jones.
Michael Thomas, I apologize to you. If you're watching this show,
Tory,
we're going to drug test Tory hold after the show.
I'm answering the question. I like Amari Cooper back.
What is in your cup that's not in mine?
To get open on a consistent basis. Stop. And to your credit, that ain't Benston, but the guy has the ability to go.
Traded.
I like DeAndre Hopkins. I like Julio Jones. Those guys, and I like Mike Thomas. Those are elite wide receivers in our league.
Me personally, I think Mike Thomas is the best
Troy,
receiver in the league.
Tory, I love you.
Yeah, Troy, I love you.
Troy, I love you. Love having you on the show. Okay. I had a little funny question I wanted to ask you at the end, but my God, I don't.
Ask it. I want to hear it.
I don't think TJ could have played with the 99 Rams. Not good enough. You agree with me?
He would have had to beat out Oz or Ricky.
Listen. Not too many people running routes like me. Period.
TJ.
Period.
What do you say?
It wasn't too many people running routes like me.
Yeah.
Period.
You would have been a backup.
Not true.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence. Like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2 and then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Joining us now is NFL super agent, longtime Jason Whitlock friend. He represented Jeff George in 1990. All right, Jerry Maguire, Lee Steinberg is here with us.
That's right.
Most importantly, he reps my guy, Patrick Mahomes. Thank you, Lee, for being here. I want to start, Lee, with the most obvious thing. Clark Hunt has said Patrick Mahomes is going to get a contract extension in the next 12 to 15 months. That takes me a little bit by surprise. That's a little off my schedule. What's your reaction to that time frame? He said it was best for Patrick and the team.
My reaction is that the last thing in the world we're thinking about is his contract. He's playing the biggest game of his career, and that'll take care of itself in due course.
Now, I know there are different calendars, at least mentally. You could sit there and have an expectation that when you hear those words, it doesn't naturally match up. Your job is not to necessarily prepare for the game, but prepare for those moments. So do you have in your head a certain time where you're like, you know what, it's time to strike for this deal?
Not really. What you have to do in a quarterback contract like this is make sure that you structure it in a way where the team is able to still perform, because getting here to the Super Bowl is really key.
Lee, when I hear we're going to wait a year, and I know you've dodged already once, but do you think they're waiting? Is the CBA a part of the calculus for you and the team in terms of you're trying to hit a moving target that you know is going to move, and so maybe that's why it's time to proceed with caution? Let's let the new CBA play out.
Jason, it's time to dodge your question again.
He's trying to make that money.
Just say that in overtime, those things will take care of themselves. I'm much more concerned that he play well this week.
Okay, Lee Steinberg, my former agent, probably your greatest client, right? Because you got me a deal I ain't deserved, brother, so respect to you. It's been a roller coaster ride in terms of your success, obviously, some disappointments, and you're back on top. How'd you get Patrick Mahomes? Like, I mean, that line has to be around the world in terms of representation. How did that occur?
I do that with my co-counsel, Chris Cabot, so we represent him together. We met with the parents. You normally meet with the parents first with the draftee. They're the screeners. And it was all values. You know, Marcellus, our practice is about role modeling, going back to the high school community, setting up a scholarship fund to the collegiate level, and then at the pro level doing a charitable foundation. And he wanted to do all of that. And so it was a matchup of values. We met with the parents several times before ever meeting Patrick.
Let me ask you this, Lee. You, as Marcellus alluded to, you've gone through quite a few deals, bounced back. What has been your advice to Mahomes and even just the other guys that you're representing based upon your knowledge of the journey so far?
Stay in process. Keep focusing on the things that will help you improve and help you play better. Don't get distracted by the externals. You know, try to tune out media, tune out everything external. So the key for a quarterback is you've thrown a couple interceptions, the crowd's booing, the game's getting out of hand, the quarterback's looked at by the center like he's on hallucinogens, right? Now what does he do? Can he adopt a quiet mind? Can he compartmentalize? Can he elevate his level of play to take a team through? So it's that focus. It's being in that moment to the exclusion of everything else.
Lee, I'm going to give you a question you can't dodge, or I don't think you can dodge. I'm going to ask specifically about you. You inspire the movie Jerry Maguire. You are the agent in all of sports. You crash. You go through some personal tribulations and crash, and people write Lee Steinberg off. He'll never be back again. Here you are back again. Tua Tagovailoa is on the way. What advice would you give to people at home that maybe have hit a low point or and want to get back up on top, what advice would you give them? What carried you through your low moments and got you back where you are today?
So I struggle with alcohol, and I would tell anybody out there who's doesn't have hope, who's depressed, who's wondering that there are 12-step programs, unique fellowships, and if you're willing to do the work, you can get back. But the key is resilience. Do you have the ability to have optimism? When you walk into that barn filled with defecation, can you see a pony in there somehow? Are you sure there's a pony? And I was raised by a father with optimism. So what excuse did I have? I wasn't a starving peasant in Darfur. I wasn't someone who was named Steinberg in Nazi Germany. I didn't have anything wrong. So my fundamental comeback was to be a good parent and to maintain what will be next month, 10 years of sobriety.
Amazing. Amazing. My God. Love it. We're talking right now that Patrick Mahomes, not your only amazing quarterback on your roster. We're talking about Tua. And I'm starting to feel a little slight for the most accurate collegiate passer in history, who was Tua. And now there's not much conversation of him going number one overall. I'm talking about a body of work that's even better than Patrick Mahomes's. When you hear the conversation talk about Joe Burrow locked in at number one and not Tua, how do you feel?
I feel like that Tua's already coming back to health. He's going to take his time, but he's already off crutches. By the time the draft rolls around, he'll have an opportunity to showcase his skills. And mock drafts and all that had Patrick Mahomes going in the second or third round until the very end. So Tua is a franchise quarterback in a quarterback-centric league that very badly needs more starting quarterbacks. Some team will fall in love with him in the draft process, and you need a team to just be totally focused. This is the one who takes us there. You can win because of him, not with. You can build around for 10 to 12 years. He's all of that. He's got superb ball skills and a sterling character.
Sterling character, I want to follow up that about Tua. Tua is certainly, he and his family, people of great faith. To me, when I listen to you talk about your journey, I think your message, your personal story, probably appealed to Tua and his family.
You would have to ask them, but I will tell you that my dad raised me with two core values. One was treasure relationships, especially family, and the second was try to use all your energy to make a positive difference in the world and help people who can't help themselves. So that's how I judge myself.
Lee, if I could ask you a favor, is there any way you could make me a part of the negotiation with the Chiefs that I could just get a little of the money that Mahomes is going to get? Could I be included in that deal in any way?
As a matter of fact, you can do the whole thing.
Get it right for free, right?
Joining us now is friend of the show and master impersonator Frank Caliendo. Thank you, Frank, for being here.
Good to be here.
I want to start on a more serious note because everybody knows Frank as the great impersonator. I actually have come to know Frank as one of the most passionate, informed sports fans that I know. Frank lives for sports. And so I'm going to start you off on kind of a serious note, Frank, because I know you were into this.
I'm glad you're wearing the wig for this.
I'm going to ask you a serious question, though, Frank. You've seen a lot of great sports icons, athletes, heroes, tough guys this week really show their emotion about Kobe Bryant and his passing. And I'm just wondering how it hits you as a sports fan to see guys like Shaquille O'Neal.
Listen, what do we look for today in not just sports, on the internet? What's everybody looking for? Authenticity. And when you see people, I watched this show on Monday. I saw you guys, when you guys were speaking from the heart, it was a lot of times television, it's pretty scripted. You know what you're going to say, and you guys were, you had some of that, but there was a lot of off the cuff, and you could feel things coming through, and tears, you could see them welling up, and people thinking different things, and not even being able to say what they were thinking. I had a moment about the Kobe Bryant thing for me personally was more of a shock. I loved Kobe as a player and that kind of stuff. I didn't know him as a person. But that shock hit me like we could all go at any point. You never know. You don't get to say goodbye to anybody. That's a crazy moment to think about. And I've been doing these little bits on Instagram with my daughter where I'm doing Gruden and she's doing Gruden back to me. And it was that kind of moment that I'm thinking about, man, just, and everybody says this, hug your kid, make sure your kid knows that you love them. Even, I try to do that with my son all the time, I love you. And he won't say I love you back, but someday maybe he will, kind of. He's too tough for that. My son is very wise for being 15 years old. He goes, Dad, can you remember someone who's crossed so many, for 15 years old, so many generations? He goes, I know Kobe Bryant, you know Kobe Bryant, your dad knows Kobe Bryant. Everybody knows about Kobe Bryant. I tried to think about that. Most of those people are still alive. He tried to name some people. He said, maybe Wilt. Maybe. I'm like, no, I, there's not many people like that.
I'm sorry for cracking this joke, but you teed it up for me. Remind your son that your dad is his grandfather. He said, your dad. That's his grandfather.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah.
We haven't got to that part
yet.
Yeah,
we haven't gotten all the speeches.
Not the birds and bees yet.
It's I look to my son. A lot of times we don't do that. We don't listen to people who are younger than us, and they have different ideas.
Right.
This is something. I watch this show for a couple of reasons. One, the sports, but two, it's a perspective that I don't have a lot of the time myself. The color skin I have, who I am, I hear a lot of different things here and take them and internalize them and go, okay, I never thought of something that way. And then I'll hear different things, and even different black people will be on this show talking about things differently and going, hey, we all think about things in all these different ways. That doesn't come out all the time. My son said this to me, another thing. He said, Dad, we always hear, and this is outside of sports, but I think it relates. He said, Dad, I always hear how it's so special and different to have had a black president, right? We all said, that's amazing. That's incredible. Many people never thought that would happen. He said to me, I didn't know any different. That to me, from the beginning, the first black president was the only black president that I remember. And I thought, that's a perspective I've never even heard.
Yeah.
I
respect the different lenses you can look at life, and your son obviously showing you a different perspective. Just one more on Kobe, because of his greatness, the magnitude of his greatness, his legacy is different for everyone. What is his legacy to you?
I'm going to internalize this again, because as me seeing him as a star and stuff like that, I tell him he's a great player, maybe not one of my favorite players. I don't want to try and make something up and say something that he wasn't. But with all the talk about him afterward, how many times do we as people get in our own way? I mean, I've ruined more opportunities for myself by not working as hard as I could at every chance I had. He's one of those guys that took every opportunity, worked as hard as he could. He had the skill to go with it and elevated to levels that nobody, imagined, right? So he got to that top level. And that was one of the things that I watched and go, oh my goodness. Are we wasting our lives and not working as hard as this? That's what I took out of it.
All right, so when I talk to Frank on the phone, this is what it sounds like these last 5 minutes. But when you're on TV and you got a crowd, you're here to make people laugh, Frank.
Yeah,
so let's talk some Andy Reid. Let's lighten things up. I got my Mahomes wig on. Let's get the Andy Reid going. Frank, why? Why?
I don't even really do the voice. I just do the look, and that's kind of unfortunate.
Why are so many people rooting for Andy Reid?
The time is yours. I don't know if I can do this. It's still... one of the things about Andy Reid, I think, is he's a normal person. You're having trouble with this, right?
This is amazing.
You're having trouble with it, trying to figure. Andy Reid is one of those guys. But he is one of those guys that you look at and you go, that could be anybody, right? And nobody seems to dislike him. That's an amazing, you don't go, he's the Tom Hanks of the NFL, where you can't find anybody who doesn't enjoy him and want him to win. Maybe the 49ers and their fans. But at this point, that's an amazing thing to me, just watching Andy Reid. I think it's because he'll be one of those guys you say, you crack a joke about a cheeseburger and he'll be like, bring it on, that kind of thing. So this is making
me
itch.
A lot like me. Yeah. Now listen, Uncle Jimmy told me you were coming on. He was a little worried about you trying to steal some of his thunder.
Ooh.
Thank God you haven't been funny at all. Uncle Jimmy, I'm sure you don't feel threatened at all.
Hey, look, I'll tell you something. I the bad guy. I the bad guy around here. Okay, Frank? I the guy that tell the jokes. I the guy you look and you say, there you go. There go the bad guy. Okay? So you know what? I don't need you to come on my show and tell jokes, Frank. Hey, I try to get the contract. I crack the jokes. I know who the hell pay you to come here, Frank. I don't need you. I got jokes. You got money to give away? Give me money there, nephew. Come on, man. I got jokes. Y'all like me? Hey, I can leave. Say goodbye to the bad guy. I leave. I ain't gotta be here. I got another segment to do. Goodbye.
There's nothing better than an Uncle Jimmy exit.
Nothing better than a black Tony Montana.
Say hello to my... Is that what he was doing?
You're Frank.
Say hello to my little friend. Yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah. Tony
See,
Montana,
because I do more of the current Al Pacino. Oh. This one, where he's looking around, trying to figure out why he's doing this, and he's not playing a blind guy anymore. That's what we're talking about. Come on, crowd. Get with me on this. Hey, now we got, to go De Niro on you. Here we go. This is the funny portion. Frank was getting very internalized, people getting bored. Now we're doing real stuff.
Did y'all like The Irishman? Did y'all like The Irishman?
I ain't seen it yet. I haven't seen it.
It was just okay.
You don't have two and a half days.
Too old. 2 months.
I need some younger guys. All right, you got any thoughts on Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
Do I look like Patrick Mahomes? Any resemblance?
Yeah,
you see
through like a funhouse mirror.
In retirement.
Long into retirement. I think this is another thing I talked about with my son was an amazing thing that he talked about how we take in football games now. We watch football. Do you watch a full football game? I watch full football games.
Yeah, Red Zone Channel.
But that's pretty. Kids, my son watches clips. Mm-hmm. And when you watch clips, that's one of the things, like we watch Lamar Jackson, who's a great player. I believe deserves MVP and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but when you watch him, what do you see? You see the three big clips of the day and talk about that. And he's usually two or three of the three big clips.
Right.
And that's the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. I love Patrick Mahomes. I think one of the things about him is he has the same kind of thing that Russell Wilson does. He goes out there, and if he throws an interception, he's just ready. And Lee Steinberg was talking about this, too. He's just ready to go to the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing. I can't think of it. Like, when I have a joke that bombs, I'm thinking about that the next day. That's how, as a quarterback, you're going on and on and on about that. It's crazy to even think about.
Frank, could you give us John Gruden's prediction for this Super Bowl, please? How about that?
I'll tell you what, man. Going straight from segues and thinking about it, just teeing Caliendo up. Here we go. I tell you what, man, you got Patrick Mahomes. He can throw left-handed further than most people can throw right-handed in the right-handed people. I'll tell you what. But I also love the 49ers defense. These guys could shut down an army. So it's going to be difficult. But I'll tell you what, I'm going with the Niners, man, because they're out of the division.
Joined once again by LeVar Arrington and James Harrison. Let's talk some Super Bowl 54, where the smack talk has begun, and not surprisingly, Chiefs defensive end Frank Clark is in the middle of it. We all remember last year when the Chiefs lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game because defensive end Dee Ford lined up offsides. Well, Ford is now on the 49ers, and Clark isn't letting him forget about last year's mishap.
I don't know nothing about him. I couldn't name a stat. I couldn't name you none. I don't even know what school he went to. I just knew he had lined up off sides, and that anybody who lined up off sides in a time like that, I feel like that's a dumb penalty at the end of the day. I'm sure he feels the same way. Myself, personally, I've lined up off sides before, not in that type of capacity, but I've lined up and cost my team, you know, games. I've jumped off sides. I've done things that cost me. I've been suspended. You know, who knows what it was, but, you know, just at any capacity, that's just something, you know, that shouldn't have happened.
I don't know his name. I don't know what school he played for. I don't know none of his stats. To me, shots fired, fair or foul.
I could think of another F word. Man, this is foul. This is messed up. I'm trying to keep my job, though. Who the hell are you, dog, to be trying to step on me to prop yourself up in the biggest moment? I get it. But we're talking about a lot of independent acts that now he's going to, like, combine and try to really just go after Dee Ford, who's probably just sitting there preparing for the game, sitting there comfortably, and now he's going to have another sleepless night to deal with this fool. Let's say this. We all try to get an edge when we out there, especially us playing defense, every single time. Now, context matters, but we've all, in the effort of trying to get that edge, have done some dumb things, went beyond the line. And then, coincidentally, we get an interception in that same moment. Oh, that's great. Now, you act like I really wanted to undermine us getting a turnover. I actually lined up with the thought of that. So anytime you line up in the neutral zone, it's a bad time. But now, because of the coincidence of what occurred, they're going to put that all on him? How about the Chiefs who didn't score a point in the first half? Are we going to put that on the offense now? That gets lost in that moment. So I think it's just foul, unfair.
I agree with you. I think it's totally foul, you know. And then he tried to back it up with saying, you know, he had done this, he had done that, he had cost his team, but he never did it in the moment that was leading up to the point of us actually being able to go to the Super Bowl. Plus, you know, he is the guy that they ended up getting to play where he is at. So it's a little kick that, you know, what we got here now, because I was smart enough not to jump off sides where you would have went on ahead and put your head all across the line.
I don't think you equate dumb and smart to lining up off sides. I think that it was a mistake. If we're looking at it in total context of how football is played, defensive linemen are the closest dudes to the ball. All right. It is boneheaded. It is a misstep to be lined up offsides. There's no way around that. There's no way around that.
What do you think about the comment?
So for him to say it was a dumb mistake, you know, I don't take offense to that at all. I think what he's putting it in the context of, I don't care what school he went to. I don't know him. I don't know his stats. All I know is in that moment, he should have been onsides. You're a D lineman. You should be onsides.
I don't take offense to that.
I don't take offense to it. I don't think that's hating at all.
I'm not sure if I take offense to it. I just think his comments, which are calculated, are dumb. D Ford made a mistake in the moment. This is a calculated deal where I think Frank Clark is trying to write himself into the Chiefs' Super Bowl history with this run, with more than just his performance. His performance has been great. I think he's had sacks in four straight games or something like that. He's been producing. His play is doing the talking for him. But before the Tennessee game, he had some words about Derrick Henry. And now, before the Super Bowl, he's got some words about D Ford. And the reason why he added that stuff on at the back is because he remembered, like, oh, you know, I had some off-field problems that hurt me, haunted me in college, hurt my draft stock. And so he knows that D Ford, if he wants to, can fire back. But I hope Frank Clark performs. And I hope the D Ford doesn't have a three-sack game because he's got a little extra.
Got a little fuel now.
A little fuel in his tank.
Got some bulletin board material. Yeah. That's something you never want to give somebody, especially leading into a Super Bowl. A man that just came off two back surgeries? Come on now.
Especially when y'all swap places.
Swap
at the same position.
Everything.
Dog, you supposed
to. Hey, give me that. Nah.
We are supposed to protect that guy, respect that guy, and just show in performance that you're better with me. But to use this moment when you know it's only to insert yourself into a conversation of he's one of the playmakers because, you know, they're both good players, really good players, but not tremendous in terms of production. But how can you always trump up your production? Start having personality with it. So I don't like that. I think it's inauthentic for a guy to do that.
I think y'all overblowing it.
Oh, excuse us.
I think it sounds cute, what y'all saying.
Okay. You would do it?
He's off.
What'd you do? London Fletcher.
If you asked me in that moment.
You would do it.
Is he offsides? What do you think about that?
Mm-mm.
I don't have to know him. I don't have to know his stats.
You could have said something as simple as, I play on defense. I really don't know what the other guy on defense is doing. Ask me something about somebody on offense.
Other teammates said the same
thing. Everybody isn't going to do interviewing 101. I just think that to be that sensitive about him saying it was a dumb mistake, it was a dumb mistake.
Well, hold on. If you D-Ford, that's a big mistake that cost your team going to the Super Bowl.
It was a big mistake.
And you want the opponent Super Bowl week to take them kind of, the guy that replaced you, taking them kind of guy shots at you?
Yeah.
Right. What are you so sensitive about? Was he offsides?
That ain't
what. Was he offsides?
Yes.
I'm not saying this.
Hold on, D-Bo. I'm going to the people. Was he offsides?
Yes.
All right, hold on. Was it a dumb mistake?
Yes.
All right.
That's it.
I don't need nothing else.
So, LeVar, you would say that? No. You would say that? I'm not really too fond of him. That set the tone.
You're not too fond of him, but you don't know him. How are you not too fond of somebody you don't know?
Say it, Devo.
Why y'all turning up? He was offside.
You know what's in this glass.
He was offside.
All right, Uncle Jimmy's here to talk about our approval rating for Jimmy G.
No.
All right, but first.
Yeah, yeah.
give Marcellus Big Dummy of the Day.
Nice. Woo! Ain't no man to do it. Big Dummy of the Day goes to the person that said, if you Google my name, first thing you're going to come up with.
Yeah, yeah.
I Googled your name and I came up with high cholesterol. I don't know what else you talking about.
Sodium. Sodium.
All right, let's talk to Uncle Jimmy, who hasn't. Now let's talk to Jimmy G, who hasn't had to carry the 49ers with his arm this year and threw just 8 passes in the NFC Championship game. But now he's up against a gunslinger, Patrick Mahomes. Marcellus, can Jimmy G hang with Mahomes in this game? If this game turns into a shootout.
Yeah, man. As I stated in A Block, this is number one versus number two in terms of them having the highest points per game in scoring. And Jimmy G is first in completion percentage in big bomb throws, 20-plus air yards. So, yeah, you can do it.
Uncle Jimmy, do you have any thoughts on Jimmy G, who I've been kind of hard on, but now I'm trying to back off here at the last minute. You got any thoughts?
Yep.
Yeah, what?
First of all, this is the reason don't nobody like you. You are what they call a professional flip-flopper.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's probably true.
Meaning, this is the reason Uncle Jimmy say, right is right, wrong is wrong, and it ain't no in the middle. Because you sitting up here flip-flopping on both sides, it ain't nothing in the middle left right now. Okay, now hold on, wait, work with me a minute. Remember the 5 heartbeats?
Yeah, I remember the 5.
You remind me of Eddie Kane. Man, when Eddie Kane said, you wanna be me. Huh? Except in this case, you wanna be Jimmy G. Huh? And that before you even open your juice-induced filled jaws to deny it, let me ask you a question.
Why?
You gonna say you ain't never wanted to play in the NFL?
Yeah, I did want to play in the NFL.
Not be a star. You would have been happy being a jock handler, wouldn't you?
No, that's not true.
Are you going to sit up and tell me you wouldn't want to be 6'4"?
Yeah, I'd like to good be looking. 6'4". I am good looking. But...
And who? White.
And who?
And white.
Hell no.
You know what that'll do to your credit score? Now, hold on. Let me get one more. You going to say you don't want to date a porn star.
We know that answer.
I've done that, unfortunately.
No, you done dated a Craigslist. Quit lying.
On your head.
Hey, man, this is a family show.
I'm just saying. Look here, man, you criticizing Jimmy G for throwing 8 passes in an NFC game.
I didn't criticize
you. You threw 8 passes on the way to the set and didn't complete a one.
Some truth to that.
Nephew, what you're doing is dangerous. Ooh. They warn people about this at this time. It's called being a bandwagon jumper. Mm. And someone with as much structure and as mass as you shouldn't be doing that. Bottom line, you just trying to cover your ass.
Wait.
Hey, man, we in Miami. Where the hell are you going to find a tarp that big? Talk to me, y'all.
Let me get to my approval rating. This is why you can't get a raise.
Man.
I've got him at a 71 all-star level. I've moved him up 6 points to an all-star level of 71. Moved him up 3 points in all-time greatness.
Yeah.
And a few points in character. You make it to the Super Bowl, your character's high.
Yeah, man, we got there 2 different ways, same score. But boy, you still don't like that porn star, huh? You got low on that character.
I'm a hypocrite. All right, so the internet has him as an all-star as well.